Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely.
Welcome to the Scottish podcast about Scottish people talking about...
you have to get at least halfway through it.
Yeah, I can't. Hang on. I don't know the script.
It helps if you go, hello and welcome.
Right, so. welcome to the Scottish podcast about Scottish people talking about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends who just like to shoot the shit with one another. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely. Hello! And welcome. Welcome to today's story with Rory. I am your host, Rory, and once again, I am joined by my lead guitarist, Johnny, and my percussion and bassist, Chris. Johnny, how you doing?
Have you got the COVID, Rory? Something going on with your...
I've got a frog in my throat.
There's your joke for the episode. Well done, Rory.
Oh, thanks very much.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, not bad. Rory sounded bizarre there,
sounded
didn't he?
Weird, yeah. It's like...
It sounded like he was having an out-of-body experience. I can't believe I don't know the intro after...
That's terrible. We're nearly
70-odd episodes.
Yeah, 80 episodes. I'm not sure how we could do it either.
He's going to be absolutely furious when he hears this back.
I have to say, he sometimes can't do it also, so I wouldn't feel that bad.
Yeah, he's dumb. Yeah, well, if you haven't clocked it, then... Rory sadly cannot make it tonight. Did he actually give us a reason why, or was it?
I was
just...
thinking that today. He has been very suspiciously quiet about why. He just sort of said, "I'm not here," and I was
He's been quite active on WhatsApp and stuff. So I'm not quite sure.
Do you know? Same thing. He texted me about 40 minutes ago, and I thought, "Wait a minute, aren't you busy?"
Yeah, I wonder what he's up to. Interesting. Maybe we just didn't give him an alternative day, and it was just thought the idea of you and me doing an episode. It's our annual Johnny and Chris episode.
Some sort of test of us, I think. Just once a week off, see how we do, and then he'll tell us that it's the lowest performing episode of all time.
Yeah, that is a worry, isn't it?
I was hoping you were going to play him the whole way through there, just not make a thing of it, just keep going.
What, did you play Chris and Rory and then eventually have a nervous breakdown?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll be able to do that, but...
He's wake up in the night with his accent.
I don't want to try either, quite frankly. Leave that box unopened. Leave that safe full of porn at the bottom of the river.
Maybe that's what he's doing. He's kicking off the investigation.
Rory's Patreon. Yeah. Unfortunately, he can't be with us this week. So, and if he is your favorite of the Thistle Trio, who I'm not sure who that would be of our readers out there.
Nobody.
But there must be a couple of you. Johnny and I are going to take a stab at a topic ourselves, and we did last time we did this, we did it on Scottish snacks, which I really enjoyed. But I think we're going to have a bit more of a musical lilt today, and music means an awful lot to both of us. Johnny, I would say more so. You know, huge part of your life.
Some might say this is a filler episode, but you know, you'd be wrong. It's like Rory's not here, therefore we've just filled it with some random topic where we talk about music for 30 minutes. However,
yeah,
it's well planned.
Like in, you know, some of the albums they do like an intermission. Song that's just kind of like an instrumental.
You mean like a B-side? Are we the B-sides?
Well, yeah, we're a sort of a B-side episode, yeah.
We're that difficult second album.
Yeah. But no, we thought it'd be a nice excuse, because we've done a couple of musical episodes, but not as much as we probably would like to have done. And a couple of these folks that we're going to mention are probably deserve their own episode at some point, but... Then again, a couple probably don't. So I don't know. The way that we're kind of doing this is we're sort of ripping off the idea of Desert Island Discs, which if I'm sure every single British listener knows what that is, but the Americans that don't know it, It's a great show on BBC Radio 4 where the host has on a celebrity every week and they talk about their favourite songs and what they would take away to listen to on a desert island. And Johnny and I think we're chosen to do, what, 4 songs each?
Yeah.
And yeah, and we kind of broken it down into different categories. And yeah, just give you an idea of some of the Scottish bands that we, if you're not familiar with them, we think that you should get on Spotify and listen to.
I think we'll also make and release a little playlist, Spotify playlist after the episode so that people can go and listen to them.
Don't we have a playlist that we fired up before?
We do. I had a quick look at it yesterday and it is full of like some terrible like kids songs also. So I wonder if we start fresh. Maybe
we should just sanitize that one and re-release it to the masses.
Yes. Scottish Songbook Volume 2.
Indeed. Yeah. And so, Johnny, I'm going to throw it over to you if you would like to say a little something first, or if you want to introduce your first band and song.
Shall we talk about the categories we've given ourselves?
Sure. Yeah,
So we felt that we should try and order this in some way. So we've asked each other to pick from our Scottish songbook, our favourite, one that just stands with you and stays with you, one that's like a reminder of childhood that takes you back to when you're younger, one that we're titling the Dougie MacLean Homesick Award for most most homesick-inducing music you can find, and then our guilty pleasure. So that's the sort of 4 that we're going for. Do you want to start with faves?
Yeah, I think so. I think we should just dive right into it and just, you know, put our cards on the table.
Let's do it. So, I mean, I can kick us off. This is kind of an easy, it's sort of a slight get out on this one because it's an easy way of plugging an old episode for me where the song...
You're just going to play that episode.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just point you there and this will do, lads. See you next week.
Yeah. This is Rory's Is a Heather's Man's Son by me.
Oh, yeah. I didn't pick any of my own songs. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I will, spoiler alert, bring some family connection into this episode. I'm sure.
Of course, that's kind of part of the homesick aspect of this as well.
Yeah. But anyway, so like starting from the top, I went with an old favourite, which we have talked about, I think, in detail before, which is a song by a pair of twins known as Craig and Charlie Reed, a.k.a. Mm-hmm. The Proclaimers. And the song I chose is Sunshine on Leith, which is just... an incredible song. So like people should go back and listen to the episode because we did talk about the Proclaimers a lot. They're a pair of twins who were like born in Edinburgh. They grew up in a little town called Ochtermuchty in Fife, which is just worth saying over and over again because it's an excellent
absolutely
name. They sang a lot of songs about Scottish identity and nationalism and were very famous for are very famous for singing in their own accents. And so there's this on their second album, I think it was, which is also called Sunshine on Leith. They have this amazing song that I was looking up the Wikipedia and there's a guy called Bill Wyman who describes it as a cross between a hymn and an Eagles tune, which I thought was great because
what,
it's...
Bill Wyman, the Rolling Stones musician?
I don't know if it is him. It says it's... I think he's a journalist from the Chicago Reader.
Oh, okay.
Unless he had...
Sorry, what did he describe it as?
He said it's a cross between a hymn and an Eagles song. Which,
I mean...
kind of makes a lot of sense to me.
Before you dive into it, I know from that episode, you then talking about the Proclaimers and Rory as well, I hadn't heard of that song until we did that episode. And oh my goodness, Johnny, it sends shivers down my spine. Listening to it, and it's on several playlists of mine now. It's just such a good anthem and so sorrowful, and it's just brilliant. Love it. Great choice.
And so I think we'll drop in a little clip here. I am going to present this just so we can both also have listened to it.
Love it. Yeah. Love it.
So just amazing. I think you said it right there where like, it's sort of this song that sounds really sad at the beginning. Like it goes, my heart is broken just over and over. And actually it kind of slowly turns into this like enormous uplifting, like being thankful for life, for Leith, for me and you, for everything. And I just think it's an amazing bit of music that is, you know, written in 1988, I think, and we're still listening to it today. And it's just like, it's full of Scotland for me. It's probably one of the few things where I'm quite willing to put aside my disdain for Edinburgh and really dive into the brilliantness of this track.
yeah.
But it's just an anthem.
It takes a big man to admit that about Edinburgh, yeah. Johnny. You know,
it's the only thing. The rest of it, I think, is terrible.
The rest of it can get to.
and so I went through like a list of Scottish songs, and it's so up there. Like I play it all the time. It's on all the like Scottish playlists I make, like you said. And I think they're just people should go back and listen, because I think the twins themselves, Craig and Charlie, are like super interesting, kind of this weird mix of punk rock meets folk meets storytelling meets country. It's all kind of like quite unusual, but it's really memorable, very Scottish. And you know, it just keeps on giving 30 years after writing it, which I think's amazing. You know, they sing it. I think there's some other weird things about it where, like, for a song that's kind of quite sad at its beginning, they sing it at the Hibs games as their, like, song in the terraces, which I also think is really funny. And also, I don't know if you remember, Chris, but you sang me a very lovely rendition of it for my birthday last year.
I did, yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. I thought it was very soulful and haunting.
that's exactly the words I used.
Yeah, why is that man smiling and yet his eyes are so sad?
I was indeed haunted for weeks after that.
Yeah, you didn't have to keep playing it on repeat, to be fair.
It turned off. Sometimes a song just keeps playing in your mind.
Yeah, with waking up screaming to it.
And so, you know, I think it's got to be up there as one of the best Scottish songs in one side. And also it's a very obvious candidate for me for being up there as something that I would take to Desert Island, because it will, you know, make me think really fondly of home, and I'll be out there in the waves singing haunting ballads.
Yeah, we should probably not say Desert Island just for copyright reasons. So perhaps we could just call it a remote part, which is a good segue into the song I'm about to talk about. That just hit me. My first song I think could qualify honestly for three of the categories, because I think it's one of my all-time favorites. It's from my childhood, and it's also, it makes me feel a bit homesick when I hear it. So the first song I'm kicking off with is You Held the World in Your Arms Tonight by Idlewild. And if it's the first track on The Remote Part, which is the third album by Idlewild, and the single was released in April 2002, and it's just kind of dawned on me that that date is quite important to me, because that would have been the year that we were all preparing for our hires, which is kind of our exams to get into university. And the teenage Chris Irvin was experiencing some sort of a musical awakening in those years, sort of when he was, I would have been 16 at that point, and you know, 14, 15, 16 being oh, Elizabeth's just brought me a beer, but I have an extra one here. Look, but thank that. You that's very nice of you. What service,
doubling up,
that's amazing.
Double park,
tell
I
you
like it.
what a woman. So yeah, I very vividly remember watching the music channels Q and Kerrang kind of on repeat, and they had all these, you know, great American rock and metal bands and English ones to an extent. But there wasn't really too many Scottish bands as far as I felt. And then this band Idlewild came along, and they'd obviously been about for a little while, but this album really, really spoke to me. And this song in particular, which was the title track, sorry, not the title track, it's the opening track, and it was their first single. And it's just this soaring, again, it's not quite a ballad, but it's not quite a full rock song. It's just kind of everything in between. Yeah. And
I think it was a song that kind of shot them into stardom, certainly in the UK. I don't know really how famous they ever got over here, although this album
I'll tell you an interesting fact about Idlewild over here. They ended up, around that time, because I do think that album was like a trigger of something bigger for them, where they'd gone from, like, I don't know if you've heard the albums before that, but they're like really heavy.
Yeah.
And it went all anthemic pop rock after that. And I think it was this sort of like shooting into the stratosphere of touring with Coldplay, and they played with like Pearl Jam, I think, over here. And then Pearl Jam requested that they go and support them in Wembley. And so I actually think it was a bit of a like catapult at that point for the band.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I think this album, to your point, they got on Jimmy Kimmel's show playing this song, and Carson Daly when he had a late night show. And that was when they were touring with Pearl Jam over here in 2003. And in the UK, the song peaked at number two in the Scottish charts and number three in... Oh, sorry, this was the album. The album peaked at number two in Scotland and three in the UK. And the song peaked at number nine in the UK charts. And also interestingly, just some little bits and pieces about it. It was the first song that the band wrote while they were in the Highlands. And... I just love the little bits about it. They kind of really got in touch with their inner Scottishness, I think, in this album as well. The song Scottish Fiction, which is the last one on the album, is a poem with Johnny, help me out here.
I'm gonna talk about this song in a wee minute.
Okay, cool, we can get to that later. Excellent. But he does sing
Roddy Wimble, the lead singer, a bit not quite as extreme as the Proclaimers, but he sounds quite Scottish, I think, when he sings. And so even though they're playing kind of like big anthemic, could be American sounding pop rock, he kind of sings in a way that I think sounds like a Scottish person singing those songs.
Yes, yeah, I'd agree with that. It's not as brusque as the Proclaimers, but it's maybe something that you'd find speaking to someone in Edinburgh in a twee
it's
bar.
A lovely accent.
He does. He really does. I've seen them live, and then I've seen Roddy Wimble live in a sort of acoustic set. He's the lead singer. I've seen him a couple times actually, because my pal Jamie is a really big fan of him, and it's just always intimate and nice and just lovely lyrics, and the songs just kind of, I just kind of melt over the songs. Haven't really listened to a heck of a lot of them since I moved here, and I'm really reconsidering that decision, because that album for me is one of my all-time favorite albums. It's just got hit after hit on it. So if the folks out there don't know who Idlewild are, I would suggest go and find it. So I'm going to play a little snippet of the song now, because it is just beautiful.
That's how you say a belter.
You get the idea. It's just a great, great chorus as well.
I feel like Idlewild were perpetually one of these bands that were smaller than they should be, in a way. Like,
well, one of the funny little asides in that I found looking at this is that in the sleeve of the album for this, there's a liner note saying "support your local poet." And apparently it's a joke by Roddy Wimble, because they'd sort of been tagged as this lyrical and poetic band. And I think it kind of annoyed them, because some people sort of put them in the same bucket as Coldplay. But they are capable of a lot heavier rock than Coldplay when they want to. It's just that this album that broke them through into the proper mainstream was somewhat Coldplay-ish. You can definitely see influences of them there.
I definitely think in a sort of like see also, if people should go and listen, there's an album called Hope is Important that is like really heavy, like kind of punky. And it's hard to imagine they're the same band when you listen to us next to each other, but it does have like some good stuff on it. I think there's a song called When I Argue I See Shapes that is worth listening. My little shout out to the early days of Idlewild.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. Okay, so both two very strong songs to start with, I think.
Great choice.
Building quite a nice album here.
Yeah. I mean, all these feel very like quite nostalgic for me. It's going to be the album you just listen to and cry for a few hours.
Yeah, well.
All right, so my next one, and you'll be able to guess who this is immediately, but we put this under the category of Reminder of Childhood, and it would be wrong of me not to pick someone who's in my family that also happens to be in a band. So I've chosen AC/DC.
Highway to Hell.
Yeah. No. So my, as Chris well knows, both my uncle and my aunt are in a band called Deacon Blue, who, interestingly enough, really took off around 1985. So they're kind of like the band's as old as I am, or as old as we are.
You may have been conceived to one of their songs, for all we know.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Horrible thought.
Have I just ruined the whole band for you?
Okay, I'd like to just not add this song anymore. and I guess it's interesting because, like, of course, I have to talk about them because, you know, I'm very close to them and they're in family, and that's kind of interesting. But also, like, I do think it shaped a lot of, you know, when I was young, they were kind of in their heyday in a way early on in Scotland particularly. And it sort of shaped a lot of the, like, inspiration for me of, like, seeing someone do music as their career. And that was really interesting. And so we, you know, I saw a lot of them playing and how you, like, songwrite and shape a show and, like, carry a crowd and all that kind of stuff.
Did you go to a lot of their gigs when you were a kid? Like, or how close were you to them?
Yeah, we went to I have all these memories of going to shows in like Glasgow and Edinburgh all the time, just, you know, every time they toured or played. And actually, even like more latterly when I lived in London, I went to see them last time I saw them was in the Royal Albert Hall. And so I'm like, man, they can still pull a crowd after 30 odd years, which is kind of amazing.
And your uncle is Dougie Ross, is that correct?
My uncle is Ricky Ross.
Ricky Ross. I'm sorry. I'm mixing him up.
You're mixing him up with the drummer Dougie Vipont, who's also a BBC presenter.
Yeah. So, sorry. I'm assuming Ricky would also then influence you somewhat on other musical tastes and introduce you to other bands.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny now because he actually does quite a lot of work on Radio Scotland and has a country music show and like bluegrass show. And so I actually listen to that quite a lot and get interest. That family have always got good music on them. And so anytime we're there for Christmas or whatever, it's always like good fun.
Good.
So shout out to the Rosses over there if they happen to be listening. But it's interesting to me because, like, you know, they've been around a long time, and there's like two songs that get the headlines. That they have a song called Dignity and one called Real Gone Kid that are like the hits. They're the ones that people know. It, you know, recently Dignity got voted as like Scotland's greatest song in this vote in 2020. And actually, it's quite funny to me because just partly knowing them as people, I kind of know a lot of the other things. And I was thinking about it because, particularly in remembering early gigs that I've been to, it's funny the things you do remember. And there's this one song I want to play you, and it's called Your Swaying Arms, which I think you will not know, arguably. And it's like from, I think, their third album that's called Fellow Hoodlums. Anyway, it's funny because I was thinking back to like the songs that don't necessarily always get the limelight. And I think I can sort of vividly remember this song being played because it's got this kind of really interesting like drum and bass, not drum and bass, like drum and bass, but like an intro that is just drums and bass. And then I think both my aunt and uncle are really good singers, and I think it puts their voices in a really amazing light. And so I wanted to play this one because I think it does make me think of childhood and remember some of those like early moments of seeing them do that and do it well.
Tell me secrets of her days when she was
That's nice. It reminds me. It's felt quite American in a way. Sort of 90s American, not in a bad way at all, but I could imagine that being in like early 90s movies, setting up kind of rom-coms, Tom Hanks Meg Ryan vehicle.
It is very melodic. It's quite cheesy. It's funny, the little bits in it, like even the toms and the drums, I can picture like hearing that like in a big venue, really loud, and like the difference between that and a track is interesting. And so it's sort of like looking back at music, it made me think a lot about those like early bits of what influenced the things you listen to now. And actually, they did in a lot of ways, even though they're family and should, you know, not just for that reason. I actually think the music's cool too.
Yeah, it's cool. I think they're, I don't want to do them a disservice or anything, but I think they're sort of an underappreciated band. They almost don't get the kudos that they deserve, I think, and for their influence in Scotland as well. That might be me being a bit harsh, but I think they deserve more.
And it's funny. I mean, they've now made, they've been going for 30 odd years. They've made 11 albums now, which is kind of wild. And actually, I was laughing because even we were talking about Desert Island Discs earlier, which we've sort of ripped off a little bit here, but Alan Cumming was on it last week or the week before, and he picked Dignity as one of his songs. So it's like, there's sort of this nice, enduring thing. Particularly, I mean, they're very known in Scotland, really, in a lot of ways. But again, that makes me think a lot about childhood of growing up with that being around.
Yeah, no, good choice. So the second one I've picked is it's a song called Always the Last to Know, and it's by a band called Delamitri, which I know you're snickering, Johnny, because
I really like it.
I think there is a little bit of a cheesiness about Delamitri. This is the main reason I picked them, is because
this is the one that goes "Look around the world, pretty baby." Is it that one?
No, I think that's a different one. Forget.
Is it?
Yeah. But I think it's on the same album, because I do know the one you're talking about, but I forget what it's called. I used to get the school run. A lift at school by my dad most mornings, me, my sister, and our next door neighbor. And he, as Johnny knows full well, is a massive, massive guitar player and loves rock and roll, and is responsible for most of my music tastes almost to this day. I mean, I was talking about teenage Chris Irvin having this formative teenage time, but I feel like I've totally stagnated since I was about 18 and haven't really bothered learning anything new since then, aside from the odd token effort here and there.
Now you're passing on to the next generation. It's just going to be the same again.
I mean, my son's already asking me to play Foo Fighters for him, so that's great. Just one song, though. One song he likes.
Wait, song?
All My Life.
Right.
Yeah. So my dad was responsible certainly for my early years of being formative, because he would play on kind of a rotation, and that was back when, you can play any song you wanted. He had, which was quite unusual for the time, a 6 CD player in his car, and we would rotate them out, and it would be Queen, Metallica, Aerosmith, and Delamitri was there an awful lot of the time as well. Right. So Delamitri was never the most popular play, but it was always kind of a nice palate cleanser to some of the more rockier elements, and I've just always had a soft spot for Delamitri because of that. And if you don't know much about them, they are a sort of alternative rock band that was formed in Glasgow in 1980, and between 1985 and 2002 they released 6 studio albums. So Change Everything is the third studio album that the song Always the Last to Know is on, and that was released in 1992, and that was kind of their breakthrough in the US. So they did get some US success eventually. This particular song reached number 13 in the UK singles chart and entered the top 40 of the US Hot 100, which I think is pretty good for them. And I found
I'm curious
this,
going back to your car journeys, what Queen album it was.
Well, Jonathan, there's an interesting story there. It was mainly the Greatest Hits albums, one and two, but we had a much bigger collection of Queen albums, like the proper ones, not just the Greatest Hits. And we lost them all in a car robbery one night.
Oh, no.
And this story has gone down in folklore in our household because it was a motorcycle thief who smashed the car window with his helmet. And my mum woke up and started rapping on the door at the front and realized that she was completely naked and looked down and realized it. And the guy got a fright and he ran away. And the funny thing was that our dog at the time, Rudy, slept through this whole thing. And then when the police turned up, he barked at the police the whole time. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so we lost most of those Queen albums, but we eventually just ended up with the Greatest Hits albums kind of on loop, you know.
Fair enough.
And we had a few Beatles albums in there as well. The funny thing was, whenever the rare occasion that my mum took us to school, her musical tastes were just awful. And it was always Barbara Streisand and Carly Simon. Which,
Carly Simon's not so bad.
In hindsight, some of it's better, but you know, when you're 10 and you just want to listen to,
it's funny how much those car journeys. I think back to like even cassettes. Like we used to drive to holidays, like up in the north of Scotland, or like drive all the way to France and things. And it was always Eric Clapton cassettes. Eric Clapton, Chris Rea, and then there was some like Dolly Parton, I think, in there. And
there was a bit of Local Hero thrown in as well on occasion. Yeah, Mark Knopfler. Yeah, it got a bit boring towards the end. My dad wanted to listen to Radio 4 on the way in, but you know, by that time I was onto Limp Bizkit.
When you're taking the bus.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, there's one fascinating story I found out about Delamitri that I wanted to tell you, which blows my mind. So their fifth album, Some Other Sucker's Parade, was released in 1997, and it did well, reached number 6 in the UK chart. And they were finding it harder to capitalize on their success in the US. And amazingly, they lost out on airplay at home and then in the US because they were going to release this song called Medicine. And they had to drop it because it came out in September 1997. And there's a lyric in it about a wreckage. And it was interpreted by some as a critique or as sort of hearkening to the Princess Diana crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, and I've never heard that story.
Apparently there was a few songs at the time that fell victim to that, you know, or films and videos and things like that. And people were so distressed about Princess Diana. But it kind of stalled their momentum as a band, which I thought, and they didn't release another album for another 5 years. Although in 1998, Johnny, I don't know if you remember, they had the official anthem for the Scottish World Cup football team. They remember the song "Don't Come Home Too Soon."
It worked out really well, didn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the most depressing songs I've ever heard. But then I was going down the rabbit hole on this Princess Diana thing, and they. I'm just trying to call it up. I've got a cookies issue right now. Yeah, I found an article from fairly recently. Where's the date?
Obscure greatest hits floating 20, around. It's no. Like all the songs that got banished because of associations with.
No, it was 20. Yeah, it was 2018, and it was Daily Record interview, and they'd done the comeback, and the comeback song was a song about Princess Diana's death. So the singer in the interview, Justin Curry, said one of the new songs called Whatever Died in Denver centers around the 1997 death of Princess Diana. And he explains there's a song about the rich woman dying in 1997. I can't even bring myself to say her name. The song is about the woman dying in a tunnel in France. It's called Whatever Died in Denver because we were in Denver when she was killed. I have very strong memories of the night. It was quite an odd experience. because we were on a tour bus and the bus was divided between people who couldn't care less, like me and Ian, and people who were very upset.
So they had a song, an earlier song, like banned from the radio effectively because people thought it was about that event. And then they later came back and did write a song about the event.
Well, not only that, it also gets weirder. He'd written a song in 1998 as well about Diana called One More Rich Girl Dead, and he wanted that to be the B-side to the Don't Come Home Too Soon song. Oh, man. But he scrapped it because the guitarist said, you can't do that. That's crazy. And so I just wonder if this guy is now obsessed with Princess Diana's death. Kind of derailing this band's US aspirations or something. I don't know.
Right.
I think it's bizarre.
Wow, that's a wild story. I've never heard any of that.
Yeah, it was one of those ones, you know, Rory does it occasionally when he just goes down this Google rabbit hole and you're like, what? Hang on, yeah. What is this about? Anyway, circling back, I'll play you a quick clip of The Last to Know. And
that's woken Rory up now, he's listening again.
You'll probably, yeah. They're talking about me again. Only I'm allowed to go down a rabbit hole. A Rory hole. That's probably something else, actually, now that I think about it.
So you're in love with someone else, someone who burns within your soul, and it looks like I am the last to know. I hear you've never felt so alive, so much desire beyond control, and as usual I am the last to know, the last.
Anyway,
great song, Matt.
Yeah,
that's a great,
you remember
song.
That song?
Yeah.
That's about
my only slight criticism of that is that does the thing that does the thing where he sort of sings in an American accent, even though he's a Scottish guy.
Yeah. But look, they had aspirations for US superstardom, clearly.
Yeah, I mean,
so
fair,
yeah.
Just, you Diana know, got in the way.
Can't have it all. Bloody Diana.
Man, that's the strangest story.
You know, Johnny, I remember the day that she died. And Newcastle were supposed to play Liverpool that day, and the game got postponed like by a week. And the only thing I remember about that was being furious that game had been postponed.
I remember being at our friend, mutual friend Duffy's house. Weirdly enough, I can sort of picture it, and his mum coming in and saying what had happened. We were both a bit like, "What?" I didn't really understand what was going on.
Yeah, bizarre. God. Anyway.
So I went home and wrote a whole album about it.
Yeah, understood.
That's what stopped me being big in America so far.
Yeah, that's the only thing holding you back.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Delamitri.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're checking out other Delamitri songs as well.
Yeah.
Some belters in there.
Yeah. The one you referenced.
Yeah, what's it called? Roll With It or something? Roll With Me?
I don't know. Right time in the wrong way. I don't know. I'm probably on Spotify. Hang on. Bear with me. Talk amongst yourselves, folks. So I'll be edited
well,
out.
This week's story with Rory.
Roll to me.
Roll to me. That's it. That's a good one too.
Yeah. We'll put that on the new playlist, shall we, as well?
Yes.
All right.
See, also, Roll to Me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm gonna kind of pick up on your thread of Idlewild. So we have a category which we've called Dougie MacLean Homesick Award, because Dougie MacLean's song Caledonia makes us all want to move home and cry. and so we've been thinking about other songs that make us homesick. And so this other song I want to pick is from that same, from the remote part of the Idlewild album. And I think you said it well earlier, like, it was like 2002, so it's quite like founding moment when we were in our sort of mid to late teens, you know, playing music, discovering artists, like wanting to be in bands, all that kind of stuff. And so like, I actually think there's a lot, kind of like the way you said it earlier, like there's a lot in this, swept up in this album for me. Like I was working summers up in, you know, the north of Scotland and things like that. And so it's all very like, there's a lot mashed in there. And There's basically this song where the very, very last song on the album is a song where they kind of start small. It feels all acoustic and it sort of builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And then it ends with like this spoken word poetry over these like soaring guitars. And so for all those reasons, I'm in entirely.
Yeah. It's the final song on the album, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I had the first one, you had the last one. It's a nice little bookend.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's excellent bookends to that album.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think people should go listen to that whole album because there's like some gems in there. But I do think these two are brilliant. And I love, there's a lot of reasons why I really love that last song, which is called In Remote Part / Scottish Fiction. And the poet read at the end. So basically, Rory Wimble, apparently in writing this when they were camped out in the Highlands in a little village called Inchinadamp, which also, again, is a great Scottish village name.
Yeah.
He kind of befriended a poet called Edwin Morgan, who, this is one of those moments where it's like, I think we should do an episode about him, because he is a Glaswegian who was the first Glasgow Poet Laureate in 1999, and then he latterly became the Scottish Macker, which is our word for our National Poet Laureate, mm-hmm. in 2004. And it's sort of like, he reads this poem that's kind of about Scottish identity, and it kind of culminates in this like big ending to the album. And it's, for me, it's kind of like extra special because I can't, when I was in art school in the West End of Glasgow, I got really interested in Edwin Morgan's work, and he writes some amazing things, but he has this kind of part of his work that is like concrete poetry, where the sort of design of the words on the page is as important as like what the words are. So they're like laid it to like help convey meaning in different ways. And I got really interested in that. And it's a story for another day, but like part of my degree show, I made this like interactive version of a poem where you could like make your own version of his poems. It's really cool, actually.
Okay.
In retrospect. All right.
Yeah.
But he, so, and he's the one that reads this, wrote and then reads this poem on the album. So it's just, it's like the perfect combination of kind of interesting music that I like, of like lots of instruments building to a huge big climactic ending, and then this like really interesting kind of like combo of like spoken word over the top of that, which sounds a bit like wanky, for want of a better word.
No, it's not,
actually
though, like,
really powerful.
It's not. I remember when I first heard that song, I felt like I'd never heard anything like it before. Yeah. And I'm sure there are many other songs like it, but not for 15, 16 year old Chris Irvin at the time. It was yes. I was like, my music having been hitting me over the head with a hammer, but this was just different, totally different.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's such a great ending to an album. Like, you know, when we don't listen to albums anymore, it's like a very complete album, I think, where you sort of can start at the beginning and end at the end, and it feels like this kind of interesting journey. So
yes.
I think pretty decent for like this kind of weird, uncelebrated indie band and an 80 year old poet. Good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about Idlewild all day, but like, I did a couple of years back, when they played on the 15th anniversary of the album, they played it in its entirety at Christmas. I think it was like 2017. And I literally landed that afternoon from New York, went and met some friends and went to the gig, and they just played this whole album. And it was like, welcome home.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I'm not trying to do a one up, because I'm more jealous on that of you there.
Probably,
but
Wimble's with you right now. Is he?
No, the only equivalent I've got is when Elizabeth and I went to Las Vegas to meet her family for a holiday, and we'd got the flight into London. We got the flight from London. That was when we lived in the UK at the time, and we landed and got wind of the fact that Emily Sandé was basically playing in the hotel next door.
Mm.
And nobody knew who Emily Sandé was at the time, because, you know, she'd just kind of broken through in the UK. And again, she's another Scottish artist who at some point maybe we'll do an episode on her, because I love some of her stuff. But they were like, yay, go see Emily Sandé for sort of $20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was the day we got there. It was like two, three hours after we landed. And it was an amazing, amazing show. And everyone in the audience was the people who were on our plane. And there was no Americans there, because no Americans knew who she was. And like,
right.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those moments are when you're like, live music is an amazing thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my nostalgia pick for the one that I would, you know, think of home through.
Okay. Is it too painful for you to play a snippet
for it. I didn't play a snippet. Yeah, let's play it now. I forgot, so it carried away.
Yeah.
I'll just sing it.
Just speak the poem bit.
It isn't in the mirror, it isn't on the page. It's a red-hearted vibration, pushing through the walls of dark imagination, finding no equation. There's a red road rage, but it's not road rage. It's a silent figure that doubts where I grow. Scottish friction, Scottish fiction. It isn't in the castle, it isn't in the mist. It's a calling of
great
the
song. All right. Well, so I guess if people have a takeaway from this, then it's just go and listen to Idlewild. We should have just done an episode on Idlewild, I guess. So my homesick thing, again, can kind of intersperse a little bit with childhood, but I was at university by the time that I'd was introduced to this artist, and it kind of speaks to me on a couple different levels. It's a song called Black Horse and the Cherry Tree by Katie Tunstall, which is a song by this Scottish singer-songwriter. It's her debut album, Eye to the Telescope, and it's a very bluesy song. It's very she uses this Bo Diddley beat from a 1955 song, and it's kind of inspired by blues and Nashville hillbillies and things like that. And the reason I like it so much is, well, it's a great song, but she is, if you don't know anything about Katie Tunstall, she lived
from
her life.
Anstruther, right?
She's got a fascinating backstory. She was born to a half Chinese, half Scottish mother. And her parents met while her mother was working as a dancer in a bar in Edinburgh, and her father was a bartender. And she was born in Edinburgh, but at 18 days old, she was placed for adoption by her mother with a family in St. Andrews. Her dad was a physics lecturer at the university, and her mum was a primary school teacher. So she actually, though, went back and forth between Scotland and America a lot, and her father took a sabbatical at UCLA in 1979. So she has a little bit of American influence, but she primarily grew up in St. Andrews and attended Madras College and the High School of Dundee, and also happened to spend the last year of her high school in the US at Kent School, which is a boarding school in Kent, Connecticut. So she's very transatlantic, which I think kind of influences her musical skills and style. When this came out, I was at St. Andrews, and Madras College was the local school. We played them at rugby occasionally, and it just caught my eye. You know, there wasn't too many female singer songwriters, I guess, that I listened to, just because of rampant sexism, basically. no, that's not true. That's not true.
Cutting that out.
Yeah, no,
cut it there.
No, but I was probably from, on a semi-serious note, on the bluesy side of things, and this song is particularly bluesy. And the also,
I think
just,
didn't she like cut her teeth doing loads of busking? I think that's what
she
I understand.
A lot of busking,
her, like,
yeah, and played very local shows. But also, as a really, really inside joke, me and some of my pals, including Rory, lived at a place called Eagle Wind, and we called ourselves, there were six of us, and we called ourselves the Eagle's Nest, which in hindsight was probably a terrible name because of the Hitler connotations now that I think about it. But we had five pals that lived in a house above a sandwich shop called Cherries, and they were known as the Cherry Tree. So we had the Eagles and the Cherry Tree. This is all totally true. So these were probably like the two groups of guys that were closest to in university, and this song came out, Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, and it was just all, and she's from St. Andrews.
Right.
It was all just very kind of happenstance and very, very strange. But anyway, just to get, that's kind of the reason why whenever I hear this song, I immediately get homesick for St. Andrews.
Right,
because
right.
I loved St. Andrews. You know, it's probably, looking back at it, it's the time that I just miss the most about my time in Scotland. It formed a lot of who I am as a person today. And, you know, it just takes me back to a place.
That's great. That I funny I just, how music is so attached to memory, I think, like, of like places and times in life, and it really shapes how you think about songs, I think, where someone might be like, yeah, it's a fine song, and it for you it's like this little mini encapsulation of so much of a part of life.
Right.
It's interesting.
Yeah it immediately has connotations for me of all my friends. And I'm picturing the three or four streets in St. Andrews and the cherry sandwich shop, which I got a sandwich from just about every day because they were so
crisp
good.
Sandwich?
No, they were more paninis, panini style.
Right.
Just to get back to the song itself and Katie Tunstall, it was first released in February 2005. It charted at number 28 in the UK singles chart, but it then did become a hit outside Europe, particularly in Canada, the US, and New Zealand. And I think her big breakthrough was she had this appearance on a show called Later with Jules Holland, which I don't really know if there is a US equivalent of that, but...
yeah, it's quite a unique show, right?
It's a very unique if people don't know who he is, he's worth Googling, but he's a very famous musician in the UK, piano player, and this show maybe has five or six artists every night that, I don't know if it's still on, but five or six artists every night, and they kind of do unplugged versions of their songs, and they're all kind of set up in different stages, and then he doesn't. Annual New Year's.
Also, it feels like they just sort of go around the room, right? Like the bands are literally sort of like circled around a massive room with like an audience kind of interspersed, and they just sort of go from one band to the other and jump around. It's like, it feels very like proper live music in a way, for TV at least.
Yeah, indeed. But the thing that made Tunstall stand out, apart from being, you know, an attractive woman playing a blues song, was this layered guitar and vocals. She played the whole thing by herself using a loop pedal, and she still does this to this day with this song live, and it's just an incredible visual spectacle. And the album eventually led to her led to nominations for the Mercury Prize, a Brit Award, Best Breakthrough Act for the Brit Awards, and a Grammy nomination as well. And that album itself has several fantastic songs on it, including Suddenly I See, which a lot of people I'm sure can hear in several films. I think The Devil Wears Prada is probably and in fact, I've just seen here in my notes the Hillary Clinton 2008 presidential campaign, which, you know. And another little nugget I found out about Tunstall and her transatlantic roots, her North American breakthrough came during season of American Idol, and one of the contestants, Catherine McPhee, who I think is quite a famous Broadway star now, had contacted her asking if she could use Black Horse and the Cherry Tree as her choice for a theme week. I think the theme week was Billboard week, and Tunstall had apparently been kind of slacking off the show, saying that it was completely controlled and they're told what to say and she didn't like it. But then the moment that Catherine McPhee got in touch, she was like, oh, well, it can't be
I love this show.
Yeah, well, it can't be that controlled because no one's going to get in touch with me about it. So apparently as soon as the song was played on the show, it jumped up to number 23. And I think Tunstall did get a modicum of US success, if not, you know, fully mainstream. But I'm just going to play a little snippet of her performance specifically on the Jules Holland show.
Cool.
Because that, I believe, is seen as her big old break.
Well, my heart knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking. Came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree. Felt a little fear upon my back, said don't look back, just keep on walking.
It's, do you know, it is amazing. And actually, like, I have a looper pedal, and it's to do that on live TV. Like, because if you make one little error in a loop pedal, it just, it repeats, right? And it follows you around, and like, then you have to start over again. And like, it's quite hard to sort of correct it. And it's like amazing to like make that sound.
With you've done that before, right? You did that on your, you had your old videos during lockdown.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
1 minute Monday. If the folks don't know what they are, go and find them on Johnny's YouTube channel. They're really good. But you, it, that does look incredibly difficult to do.
It's really hard. I mean, I had the luxury of recording it so you can get it wrong and do it again. Like, that's live TV, and she did it in one go, and it's, like, I can't underestimate how difficult that is, and it makes it, it's amazing. And also the song's really good, so it's, like, pretty impressive performance.
The song is a great, great tune. So, yeah, that's my childhood, no, sorry, that's my... homesick Dougie McLean award. I always get a little bit teary-eyed for St. Andrews whenever I hear that song. So we're rounding out toward the end here. We have our guilty pleasures, I guess. So
guilty pleasures, yes. So I don't know quite what to say about this. I don't know if it's so guilty, really, my guilty pleasure choice, but it seemed to me that the band Travis were never very cool.
Yeah, fair.
Is that fair? Is that a fair point?
Yes, I think that's fair.
Okay, maybe they weren't very cool. They always had this sort of like badge of being like, oh, they just write really sad, boring songs.
Yeah. Now, I can't remember exactly when Travis came out and when they were big, but I always sort of associate them with a bit of a depressed Trainspotting style vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like I think that's what we think of when we think of them. And like, it's probably not helped by like all the names of their albums were like The Boy with No Name, The Invisible Band, The Man Who. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It just all seems a bit miserable. But anyway, so like, background to the band is they were formed in Glasgow in 1990. They're led by a guy called Fran Healy, who's the lead singer. They actually went on to like do pretty well. I think the one of their biggest albums, The Man Who, was like certified 9 times platinum, which is like 2.68 million sales in the UK. And then another album in 2001 peaked at like 39 in the US Billboard chart and spent 7 weeks in that chart. So like not enormous US success, but like they were big and they're, I'd say they're pretty known. And it's funny because I think they're often, there's some songs where they had a very famous song called Why Does It Always Rain On Me, which kind of got a lot of fame because in, I think, like, 99 or something like that, they played at Glastonbury. And literally, almost, like, as soon as they started playing the song, it started raining. And it was just this perfect kind of, like, planets aligning.
I mean, that song encapsulates everything about Scotland, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they've often been, I think, like, critiqued as being, like, overly melancholy or just a bit depressing or, like, fine, but not super interesting. And but there's this one song called Turn that I listen to enough, or like with enough regularity, to know that I quite like it. And it's sort of entered the realm of guilty pleasure for me because I think I don't really like telling people that I like.
I don't like know if it. I know this song.
I'm gonna play you a bit of it and see if you recognize it. That may be the place to start.
Oh yeah, I do. I know this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even the video here, Johnny, looking at it, it's in a council estate. He's got a skinhead, or sorry, he's got a buzz cut. It's raining. It's like, that just screams Trainspotting to me.
It looks like Trainspotting. And I think all he does is just do press ups, does push ups for the whole video. And it's all a bit bizarre. But I was going through kind of like, what are the ones that I don't want people to know I have on a Spotify playlist somewhere? And this is definitely one of them because it doesn't really, it kind of kicks off with this kind of like jangly acoustic guitar, some electric guitar in the background. It kind of builds up to this big like melodic chorus that just goes turn, 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 turn. Like even the lyrics are like not very inspiring, and like maybe that's why I quite like it. It does sort of a lot with not very much.
Yeah.
And so that for me is probably my guilty pleasure on here, I think.
I think that qualifies. I think it's slightly, it's not humiliating to say that you like Travis, but it's like, you don't, you're not going to lead off with that.
Yeah, it's not on my, like, it's not on the top of my LinkedIn page.
No. But okay.
I did, I actually, one thing I read about them was they, when they released this single, they accompanied it with a cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time, which I had never heard. Okay. And that was kind of interesting, so I want to look that one up as well.
Yeah, that's worth finding out.
Britney Spears herself heard the Travis version while shopping and commented by saying it was a total shock and was a very good cover.
Five stars.
So I don't know, there's not a lot to say about that, but actually I do think it's quite a good song.
Yeah. Now that I've heard it again, I do vividly remember it. And I do believe that was one of Travis's more upbeat songs.
I think so.
And yeah, they did have some big success. I do remember Why Does It Always Rain on Me was played all the bloody time. Okay, so my last one is, I've made reference to this band before after we got an email from a reader saying, I can't believe you did a whole musical episode on the Proclaimers, I think it was, or maybe it was Annie Lennox, and you guys didn't talk about the Bay City Rollers. So
yes,
just a disclosure to everybody, the Bay City Rollers are a Scottish band, but we are going to talk about them right now. Now, again, if this reader, I forget your name, I'm so sorry. We will probably do a full episode on the Bay City Rollers at some point, but I just want to, this is a proper guilty pleasure
before
song.
We call out that we're talking about it right here.
We are
right
talking
now.
About this right now. They are a band. So the Bay City Rollers, if you don't know, are a Scottish pop rock band who were very well known in the 1970s. They have been called the Tartan Teen Sensations from Edinburgh, and they are apparently one of the many acts heralded as the biggest group since the Beatles. Can you imagine that?
Wow. Huge.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I do feel like they wear tartan, and like if you Google Bay City Rollers, every image has tartan in it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, lean into what you know. Yeah. So the did you know that the Bay City Rollers have sold 120 million records worldwide? So they are one of the best selling artists of all time.
I
mean, that is,
didn't you?
No, I didn't. The group did very well in the UK, obviously, and they then launched in North America, and they were they did well. In 1975, they reached number one on the US Billboard Hot 100 with the song I'm going to talk about, Saturday Night.
Oh, great.
Okay. Saturday Night had apparently missed the UK chart completely 2 years earlier, and it managed to make number one in the US. And this track was their American debut, and they played it on Saturday Night Live back in '75. Did very well, also got number one in Canada. And the album, the Bay City Rollers, which was a North American...
Yeah, this will do an episode without mentioning Canada ones.
Yeah, of course. The album hit number one in the US charts as well. And then a second North American hit came with Money Honey, which hit number nine. I mean, we take the piss out of the Bay City Rollers quite a lot at home, and they're kind of viewed as this stupid 70s bat. Like, they're so 70s.
Yeah, it's funny. It feels like a bit kind of like twee almost, but like those numbers are big, you know, that's big numbers.
Those are massive numbers. They are proper superstar numbers. And they were clearly pushed very highly. I mean, they are so dated in 70s. But the reason I love this song is because it's a key part in the film Sorry, Married an Axe Murderer. When Mike Myers plays the main character Charlie, but he also plays his dad in it, which is one of several instances of Mike Myers playing more than one character in a show. Back then it was very effective, now it's just got ridiculous. He's apparently in a new Netflix show where he plays like eight different characters. It looks horrendous. But he's taking, I think he's either taking his girlfriend to meet his family, or he's just going over with his friend. I can't remember. There's a couple sequences, and it's the first time you are introduced to his Scottish expat family living in San Francisco, and just lean into all the Scottish stereotypes. And as they come in, the dad starts playing this song. And it's the first time I'd heard this song, and it's just so catchy. And he starts dancing and doing like a sort of Scottish jig around the house, and then he starts kind of insulting his wife and his younger son. And it just fills my heart every single time I see the scene. So I'm going to play you the scene, Johnny, of the moment that this song comes on, because it is one of my all-time guilty pleasures, not just a musical guilty pleasure. The Scottish Wall of Fame. Yeah, it's the first scene that you're introduced to his parents, and it's got every kitschy Scottish thing in it. Scottish Wall of Fame with Sean Connery and Sir Jackie Stewart on it. It's got the lion rampant on the wall. It's got the tartan blankets, and he's drinking McEwen's Export, and it's perfect.
That's great attention to detail there. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect.
Got to get in, as people might not know, we have a tradition where we play like a little pump up song before episodes often. I'm like, I think that's gonna have to make it onto the playlist now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's gonna have to. So that's our eight
also
song
not
set.
That guilty, I suppose.
Well, I mean, like, one man's guilt is another man's innocence.
Yeah, fair enough.
So does that work? No,
yeah, that's the saying. Yeah,
that's the phrase.
One guilty man's an innocent one's other was one.
Yes, I guess. Can we get a fact check on that, please?
Yep. Oh, actually, we don't have fact checkers on this podcast.
So yeah, that's I guess that's our lot of songs.
We did it.
We nailed it. I thought, but we did a good job.
I don't think we need them back, to be honest.
No, but we might have to take it more down a more musical route. It's clearly, it inspires.
I do think it was interesting just even giving ourselves like a few little categories. There's so many songs like I want to talk about. Just, I think there's some great Scottish songs, and even like some of these ones, like when you dig into some of the other things by them, like this kind of other interesting Katie Tunstall songs, and like there's just like lots to do there, and I feel like we could keep doing this more, which is
we
great.
Could call it a segment. How about Jukebox Jocks?
Oh, that's good. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, it is. all right. Well, unless we've got anything else to say, Johnny, do you want to take us out?
Yes, this'll do, lads. Lad, this'll do nicely. Yeah.
Hello! Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thistledopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @thistledopod. You can also visit our website, thistledonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram @JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs and kisses from the Thistle Do Nicely pod.